Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this fine food Friday, May 22nd. I'm Ray Graff, and I love me some icebox cake. Actually, I don't know what icebox cake is, but it sounds phenomenal. And we'll find out what it is, because today, with her recipes and tips for frozen desserts, is Food Friday favorite, Deanna Fox, founder of Albany Cooking School, currently offering online classes. We'll talk about that as well. But if you have a question about sweet treats, especially ice creams, frozen pies, the aforementioned icebox cake, whatever that is, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or email us if you want to, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Deanna Fox, frozen things, coming up after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today we welcome back a Food Friday favorite, Deanna Fox. She is here with her tips and recipes for frozen desserts today. Deanna is a food and agriculture journalist and an educator and sometimes podcaster based in the Capital Region. Her work appears locally in the Times Union and the Daily Gazette, as well as in national publications like USA Today, the Washington Post, Eater, as well as the Kitchen and Beer Advocate. Deanna founded Albany Cooking School, and you can find a whole slate of online classes at albanycooks.com. Well, there are so many things to talk about with frozen food. If you have a question about dessert recipes, even just baking at home, give us a call. We have an expert here. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Deanna Fox, welcome back to the show.
Hello, how are you?
Good. How's the health of you and the little ones?
Oh, everything is good here. No complaints. We've got sunshine. Everything's in bloom.
Nice.
I'm eating ice cream right now as we're talking. So can life get much better?
Well, you know, that's pretty good. Now, let me ask you a question. Now, your kids have been doing the online learning, like my kids have been doing the online learning. And there's a fair amount of angst from the students, at least in my house, and also with the teachers. How is it going for your kids? Are they taking to it?
Yeah, my kids are doing pretty well with it. I have a fifth grader and a fourth grader, so they're kind of in this in-between period where they're old enough to kind of manage it on their own, but they're young enough where they don't have really strict requirements for what they're having to learn. There's a little bit more flexibility in this age group, I think. So, you know, they get on twice a week with their teachers, and they get to see their classmates, and they do the work. My daughter has really been able to connect with her friends a lot. So every day she gets on with her little pod of buddies, and they do like group work together, which is really fun to listen in on. Also really interesting to see how the personalities interact with each other in the outside of, you know, just play and actual learning. Who's the dominant force in the friend group? It's pretty funny.
You know, go ahead.
They've been doing pretty well with it, and we're really lucky that our school district provides a lot of like supplemental information too. So if kids want to kind of dig in deeper and do a little bit more online fun stuff, they can. So been going good so far.
That's good. The reason I brought it up, one of the things that I have been watching as this business closure, the lockdown, if you will, has gone on for a couple of months now, is some distance things work really well. Some not so well, and this is true in schools too. There are some classes, it's pretty easy to do from afar. But one of the things I've seen, and we've had so many guests on this Food Friday that are doing classes online, and they're working out really well. It lends really well to online cooking. I know you've been doing a lot of this at Albany Cooking School. So where do you stand?
You know, it's really interesting because when in our physical space, you know, people get that real deep interaction, interpersonal interaction, and you can actually like stand right next to them and kind of correct them if they're doing something, you know, without a good form, we'll say. But when you're at home, you're able to use your own equipment.
Yeah.
You're able to use your own stuff. You're familiar with your kitchen. You know, the flow pattern is what you're going to be you know, doing when you get home anyway. And I really, really like it. You know, that doesn't mean that we'll only ever do online classes, but I think we'll always offer online classes because the ability to really cook in the way that you would do it at home is so powerful. And for me, why I teach cooking, it's really about, you know, just getting people involved in what they're eating. And food is such a conduit of so many other things. It's a conduit of care and love, respect for yourself. And when you're actually doing it at home, it makes you feel like you're more apt to continue doing it. When you come into a cooking school and you do it, maybe it's just like a fun night out with friends, and that's something that you'd ever really do again. Maybe you'll never cook those recipes again, but when you do it at home, I think it really lends to, you know, developing this real sense of place and self through food, which I just love. That's why I teach cooking classes.
We are joined today by Deanna Fox of Albany Cooking School, and the online classes you do are live. How do you do that technically? Through Zoom?
Yeah, we do Zoom, and we have it set up so that, you know, if students need to pop on and turn their cameras on and, you know, show us why their ravioli isn't turning out like my ravioli, and we can correct it. So you're still getting that that real hand-holding that I think people like about a cooking class. And then you also get to view the class for a week after. So you get a replay.
Oh, that's cool.
Which allows you to kind of, yeah, refer back. And it's also great, too, because if you can't, for some reason, if a kid starts bugging you or something comes up with work and you can't be there for the whole class, you can always jump in and out and refer back when you need to. So that's also been really great. And we've had people, like, if we're doing something during the day, like, you know, 11 o'clock in the morning or something, and they're working and they can't do it, they'll still buy the class, and then they'll kind of view it on their own time, which is really nice.
Have you had a chance to sort of gauge the psychology of the students? In other words, comparing it to those who show up for the in-person classes. For me, that would be a terribly intimidating thing because, as you well know, I don't know how to cook. But if you're in your own environment, do you find that people are a little looser now?
For sure. They're definitely looser. And I do think that people, you know, you always have people that are kind of slinking around in the background and they don't really want to engage. They just want to watch. And this allows you to just watch and also not have any eyes on you either. Nobody's going to be seeing what you're doing. So you can kind of do whatever you want during class. But I think too, that the difference is, the classes that we're creating for the online program, and the people who are taking those classes are people who really, this isn't just entertainment value for them. Of course it's fun and engaging, but they really want to learn how to cook this stuff. They really want those details and techniques and recipes and build a connection with the instructors that we have.
So you'll keep this going then once we presumably are allowed to go back out into places and walk around, even if we have masks on, you'll continue with the online?
For sure. And we've also, you know, we are able to reach people that couldn't come to our classes before. So maybe even people, you know, just in the Berkshires or Vermont that might not come through. But we have students on the West Coast in Seattle and San Francisco and Texas. In Pennsylvania and Ohio, we have people from all over the place who are coming in and taking these classes. So that's been really fun, too.
That is very great. All right, we'll take a quick break. You know, this show is supposed to be about frozen delights, and we haven't even gotten there yet. But we will after the break. Our number is 800-348-2551. Deanna Fox is here from Albany Cooking School, and we'll be right back. We'll talk, what is an icebox cake? I don't know. We're going to find out. It's Vox Pop Food Friday. Ray Graff here. 800-348-2551 is the number, or you can email us as well. VoxPopWAMC.org. Deanna Fox is here from Albany Cooking School, talking a little bit about distance learning and how well it works in the cooking realm. And then there's this camp in a box thing. What the heck is that?
Yeah, so, you know, one of the things that we look forward to at the cooking school every year is our kids' classes and our summer camp programs. And, you know, that's a little bit hard to do right now.
Yeah.
And it's great because it gives, you know, it's kind of like a multi-fold fold benefit. So it gives parents an outlet for their kids during the summer months. It gives the kids something fun to do. And then usually like the kids end up having like this fold dinner that they bring home to their families at the end of class. So you don't have to cook at home either, which is really great. But, you know, we can't do that. And we also really want, you know, it's part of our philosophy that you should always have your kids in the kitchen with you as best you can and get them engaged to understand how food works, because that has so many other benefits to it, whether it be, you know, just understanding the world around you, understanding culture, a lot of math skills, reading skills. So we're working on developing a camp in a box program where you'll have an online kind of portal for learning. And it'll have, you know, our structured weekly classes, weekly camps, and we'll actually send you some specialty ingredients and some select equipment. And then you can kind of just let your kid log on whenever they want to.
So that's great.
They can do, you know, 4 hours a day. They can do one recipe a day, whatever they want. So we're working on rolling that out now, and I'm really excited about that, because kids are like, people don't think that kids can cook, and we have had such great experience and success letting kids like do chopping and do sauteing and form things, and a lot of times they end up a lot better than the adults that come to our classes. So yeah, it's really fun to watch the kids cook.
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you teach the kids how to clean up the kitchen? Because I got a few that can cook very well and they can't clean up a kitchen to save their hides.
Absolutely. We always, you know, say start clean and clean. So, you know, you start in a clean kitchen, you take structured breaks all the way through to clean up as you go. And then when you're done cooking, you don't have as much mess to clean up. So that's almost should be written into recipes. I don't know why people don't do that. They should write in little breaks where, okay, now take a break and go wash this bowl or run the dishwasher at this point, because that's the worst part, all the cleanup.
You got that right. Our number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. On this Food Friday, Deanna Fox is here from albanycooks.com. That's Albany Cooking School. And, you know, every time you're on, you do pretty much everything. So you say, well, today we're going to do frozen desserts. Well, that's great. And you put something on the list, and it says ginger and orange icebox cake. And frankly, I found the whole concept of an icebox cake to be perplexing. Explain.
So traditionally, an icebox cake is a cake that's not actually cake, and you definitely do not bake it. So it's almost like a trifle or like a parfait, a layered dessert. So it usually consists of some sort of base of like a cookie or a cracker, and that's where you can have a lot of fun. You could do graham crackers. You could do like digestif biscuits. That recipe has ginger snaps for the base.
Yeah, I love ginger snaps. So this looks great.
I love ginger.
Why don't you run this recipe down for us?
Yeah, so then you basically can do it in a round pan or a square pan, whatever. And you put down, you know, you want to kind of grease it. You could do a cooking spray if you want, but I like butter. And then you put down your layer of ginger snap cookies, and then you make like this whipped cream, cream cheese mix with a little sugar. So it's like this real, almost like a cheesecake. It gets like a cheesecake quality to it. So you do layers of the cookies and then some orange marmalade and then the cream, and you keep layering it basically like 4 to 5 layers until you use up all your ingredients. And then making sure you end with the cream mixture you chill it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So you pop it in the fridge and the cookies absorb up some of the moisture, so they get softer. And then you can slice it like a cake, and it's delicious and it's cold and, so good.
Ginger and orange marmalade sounds like an amazing combo. I got to tell you, it does sound good.
So good. Yeah.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Deanna Fox is our guest. We talk frozen desserts today. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And early today, I mean like 2 hours ago, Emily wrote in and she had a question for you. I have yet to make a homemade ice cream cake that is not freezer burnt or where the cake isn't completely frozen. Any recommendations for how to make a great, cuttable ice cream cake at home?
Well, the biggest tip with cutting an ice cream cake is to have a hot knife. So I keep like a really, like a kitchen towel that I dunked into some really hot water. And then you can kind of clean your knife off with that. But when the knife is hot, it cuts through that ice cream really easily. But the best part of an ice cream cake, in my opinion, is not even the ice cream. It's those little crunchies, like those little crumbles of like sandwich cookie in the bottom and in the middle and the whipped cream on top. And I really love, I mean, people might get upset about this, but I really love Cool Whip on top. I don't even like a homemade whipped cream for that.
Why
like
would people
cool
get
whip.
Upset about that? That's good stuff,
because
right?
Because people think Cool Whip isn't really dairy. It's not really cream, but there's something about that taste that's so nostalgic. It just like takes you right back to being a kid. It's so good. But getting the crunchies in there, and you should really like add some hot fudge or something so it has a base to stick to. And the ice cream, when you start layering in the ice cream, should be almost kind of soupy. And then how you can protect from the freezer burn is to make sure that each time you put it in the freezer to harden, you really pat down some plastic wrap really well over the top of it.
Uh-huh.
And really kind of use your fingers to get it into the kind of the nooks and crannies around the corners so that air can't get in and kind of create those little ice crystals on it. So I would say that. And then also, you know, another thing that could be done is you could make, if you need to pop out, you could do it in like a springform pan where the sides actually loosen and come off, and then you're just left with that base. And that might make it a little bit easier for cutting.
Now, Emily's email, and of course, I'm only inferring here, but it seems like she is actually using like a layer of cake that you would bake, because she says where the cake is not completely frozen. Sounds to me like there's actual cake in this. Is that a no-no?
Hmm. Well, this just sounds like cake and ice cream to me, not ice cream cake. When I think ice cream cake, I think of like the thing you would get from like, you know, like the Carvel ice cream cake. But I mean, I guess you could, if you had like a sponge cake base, it might be the kind of cake that you're using. So if you have anything that's really, really airy, like a sponge or a Genoise, then it wouldn't really freeze that well because there's so much air into it. You can't really freeze the air. So you probably want something that's a little bit denser, like a really heavy butter cake or like a chocolate mayonnaise cake or something like that.
Or
that
a flourless cake really kind of thing? Like a
flourless cake might work. It might be, if you're doing one layer, like if you're baking it in the pan and then you're freezing the pan and then doing ice cream on top, I'm sure that would work, but that's really dense. So that would probably freeze really well.
Our guest today is Deanna Fox. We talk frozen treats and such, and really any food and cooking question you have, she can answer. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. I was having gelato with my children the other day. And one of them, you know what? Here's the thing. I've done this show now. Rocco DeFazio, my buddy, okay, he's got this like $9 billion gelato machine at his shop, okay? He always tells me the difference between gelato and ice cream. And yet my youngest one asked me, what's the difference? And I didn't have a clue. So explain again.
You don't remember? I think that you might know.
I don't remember.
No guesses in the dark?
No. Nope.
So the difference between gelato and ice cream is gelato, typically there can be lots of differences, fat content and things like that. But the biggest difference between ice cream and gelato is that gelato has less air churned into it. So it's in your mouth, it tastes a lot richer, and it is richer because it doesn't have as much air in it. So every time you take a bite, a spoonful of gelato, you're actually getting more cream, more sugar, more flavoring per bite than you would with ice cream. So that's kind of the biggest difference.
So the ingredients are the same then?
They're close to the same,
It's just a question of overrun.
Yeah, see, you know what you're talking about. You've been hanging out with Rocco too much.
A little bit, yeah.
Overrun. That's a very technical term.
Thank you.
But that's the biggest difference. But then, of course, with ice cream, there's different types of ice cream, too. So, like, a French-style ice cream has egg yolk in it. And so it gets, like, a custard base. And then, of course, you know, there's frozen custards and things like that, too, which have a mouthfeel that's closer to gelato than traditional ice cream that you would get from Friendly's or whatever.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, they're both, you know, it's hard to complain when somebody puts a bowl of ice cream or gelato or frozen custard down in front of you. Basically, if you have a choice, you can pick what your preference is. But are you really going to complain with what you get if somebody just plops it down in front of you?
Well, I'm pretty good at complaining, I'll tell you that. Well, wait, what's what's semifreddo? Any number of hilarious off-color jokes would come into play here. But what is semifreddo?
Yeah, some sort of Godfather reference, I'm sure, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So semifreddo is kind of like an unchurned ice cream, but really how you make it is you make it like a mousse. So you can make a base that has, you always make like a custard base that might have like sugar, milk or cream, egg yolks in it, and your flavorings. But then you also whip cream, like you're making whipped cream.
Yeah.
And you fold those things in together, and then you put it, you don't churn it, you don't really do, you don't need an ice cream maker for it. And it holds flavors really, really well. So you can incorporate, you know, if you want to do like a liquor-based ice cream or a line ice cream or, you know, fruits that you swirl in, it holds that texture and those flavors really well. Yeah. And then you just freeze it. So when you cut it, it's really, really, it's almost like if you took soft serve ice cream and just, you know, kind of poured it into a, like a bread loaf pan and then froze it and cut slices. It's almost that texture.
Oh, that's brilliant. I'd like to try that.
Yeah.
You mentioned putting booze in, and I always heard that was extremely difficult to do with frozen stuff.
Mm-hmm. It is because alcohol doesn't freeze the same way that water does.
Right.
Water that's in milk, cream, or whatever. So a lot of times when you're adding something into homemade ice creams or whatever, whether it's alcohol, well, to start with, if you add alcohol in, you usually have to cook it down a little bit and cook off some of the alcohol to keep the flavor.
Yeah.
So almost like you're making a reduction. And that will help it freeze up. Otherwise, it's just kind of really, really soft. It never really gets hard. But the same is true for if you're doing like fruit ice cream. So strawberry season is right around the corner. And the trade-off with my children is if I can convince them to come pick strawberries with me, I have to make homemade strawberry ice cream for them. But a lot of times when people make fruit ice creams, they get really icy. And what that is all the water content in the fruit, creating little ice crystals when it freezes in the ice cream. So you almost have to make like a jam. You really have to cook down and stew the fruit before you add it in. You know, you can puree it or add it in whole, whatever, into your ice cream, or else it gets really icy.
You know, speaking of icy, you're fairly young, so you probably don't remember this, but a long time ago, like the 70s, ice milk was a thing, and all the big companies made ice milk, and it always had these crystals on it, and it was generally, uniformly rotten.
Well, the crystals are because there's less fat in milk than there is in cream.
Yeah.
So I have in front of me right now something that I'm eating. We ate this for brunch today, essentially, somewhere between breakfast and lunch.
Yeah.
I made profiteroles.
I'm sorry, what?
Ice cream and the profiteroles. So
that's
they're
a
like
drug, isn't it? Take two profiteroles.
It might be. Yeah.
No. Okay.
And then call me in the morning.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Now what is it?
It's if you've ever had a cream puff or an eclair.
Right.
It's that shell. So the dough for that is the outside of a profiterole, and then instead of injecting it with custard or cream or whatever, you just put a scoop of ice cream on the inside. And it's almost like a little ice cream sandwich.
Oh, nice.
And then you can put chocolate sauce on top, hot fudge, salted caramel. It's delicious. But I made the ice cream for that. So I made French vanilla ice cream to put on the inside.
Ooh.
And yeah, so what makes that really good is it starts with just milk to help form the base. But then you add in twice as much heavy cream. So it's not all cream. It's not like cloying in your mouth. The milk helps cut it a little bit,
right.
But it's still really creamy and rich because it has all that added fat. So when you have ice milk, it's basically ice cream with less fat. It's almost like more like a frozen yogurt without the tang.
So that was your brunch? That's pretty.
Yeah. I mean,
you're pretty fancy.
I
tell you what.
I mean, that's been my only meal today, to be honest. I've had two.
Living over at your house is it's pretty exciting. All right. This email came in from our friend Lauren in Albany. It's not really about frozen food, but she's an attorney, and I really don't want to get sued today. So here's the question. She writes, I'd like to know about grilling fruit. I know it's not frozen, but it's a dessert. Grilled pineapple or grilled peaches, things like that. Here are my questions. One, what's the best method to make this not a total mess? Two, what are some easy recipes? Three, the best fruits. And that's a billable hour right there from our attorney, Lauren.
That is.
Yeah.
So grilling fruit is so good. And the reason why grilled fruit tastes so good is this thing called the Maillard reaction.
What?
And what that is, the Maillard, M-A-I-L-L-A-I-R-D, I think.
Okay.
And it's basically this old French guy, 100-something years ago, kind of discovered this by accident, like all good things, right?
Right.
So what happens in that reaction is all of the sugars, essentially, in food, when they come under direct heat or engage with direct heat, the sugars synthesize into carbon.
Mm.
And so that's why when you, like, cook a steak and you get those awesome grill marks on it.
That's the Maillard reaction?
That's the Maillard reaction. So much better than, if you like boil the steak or something. So the same thing happens with fruit. Fruit has so much sugar in it. So when you put it on the direct heat of a grill, it creates like a caramel within itself. It's a chemical reaction with the sugars that turn it almost into a caramel.
Right.
So things that work really good for that are things that have a little bit of a lower moisture content that are kind of big too. So peaches or any kind of stone fruit, nectarines, anything like that, plums, really awesome on a grill.
So you said a lower moisture content?
Yeah. So like something like a berry is so delicate
and
has so much moisture in it that it would just, you would lose more moisture than you would give it time for the sugars to caramelize. So it would just turn to mush.
Yeah.
So those are really good if you roast them, or you could even put them on, if you get a cast iron or some sort of skillet, something that's heat proof on the grill, and then added your berries there, especially if you have like a charcoal grill, you'll get a lot of that smoky flavor in the fruit, but you don't have to worry about any of it dripping down and losing it in your grill. But sliced bananas, like sliced hot dog style, down the middle horizontally so that they're two long pieces of banana.
Yeah.
With the skin still on, grilling those is really, really good.
Why the skin still on?
Just helps keep it together. Yeah. So you're not really going to turn it. You're just going to keep it on that one side, on the cut side, and then you can pull the skin off.
Interesting.
The peel when you're done.
Do you do this at all, or is this just something you know?
Yeah, we do this all the time. It's so good. And it just really does develop. You don't have to add maybe a dollop of whipped cream or something. I really like to add, when I make whipped cream, add in a dollop of sour cream or creme fraiche, and it gives it like a little bit of a tang.
Yeah.
So you just have more flavors, but those are all good. But if you want to do two, you can get like a seafood cage. It's got like two long handles on it. And it's good for like smaller vegetables too. And you can put fruit in there and it prevents anything from falling down into the actual fire.
Can you grill apples?
Yeah, why not?
Well, have you done it?
I don't know what you would do with them. I'm trying to think.
You'd eat them.
Well, yeah, I know that. But, like, with what?
I don't know. Pork roast?
Probably. Yeah, that would be good. If you had them as, like, an accompaniment.
Yeah.
Instead of, like, their own dish. Yeah, that would be really good.
You see, I'm all about the good ideas. Let's take a break and end on a high note. And then we'll come back and we'll hit the phones and we'll get some more with Deanna Fox via email. We'll talk about, we have a sourdough support group? Really? Do we need one? We'll find out. I love this record. It goes back several years now. The Deep Blue Organ Trio, and they did a record called Wonderful, where it's all Stevie Wonder tunes, and that's a good one. All right, now back to the show. You like that one?
Yeah, it's good. You always have good music on.
I love them. They opened for Steely Dan at Tanglewood maybe 7 or 8 years ago, and it was really great. What an opening act. Our number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Deanna Fox is here from Albany Cooking School, and we're talking frozen desserts today and other things. And we'll get to the phones in just 1 second. This email came in from Mark. Mark writes, "Sometimes when I get a craving for ice cream, I run to the local supermarket to buy a half gallon, but lately, whenever I look at the various options in the frozen section, many of the cartons say frozen dairy dessert instead of the words ice cream. What is this new thing called frozen dairy dessert, and is this healthy?" That's from Mark.
Well, it's better than the saying, non-dairy, and then turning it around and it's all hydrogenated soybean oil, which is a lot of times the case with those things. But ice cream is federally regulated, and it has to have a certain amount of fat content to actually be called ice cream.
Right.
So I think that's probably a case of it not, being a lot of overrun, as you said, a lot of air incorporated into it.
Oh, yeah.
And a lower content of fat to actually call it ice cream by, USDA standards. So yeah, that's probably what that is. That
makes sense. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Deanna Fox is here. And before we get to Emily in Plainfield, just quickly, I saw in my notes, sourdough support group. I know that every person and their brother have been making bread on social media, but what do we need a support group?
I think so, because we did a sourdough boot camp through the cooking school, and we had great success. We had about 200 people sign up for that. And now, I don't want to just be like a talking head telling people what to do with their sourdough starter. So many people who are friends of Albany Cooking School have great ideas. I get all these emails with what people are up to and what they're doing. And so the support group is just a way, which we're launching next week, it's just a way for them to post and share their ideas and their recipes and show other people what they're making, because, food is very democratic and people should all have a voice in it. So I just want to see what other people are making. I think it'll be great. Plus, yeah, it'll be a way to troubleshoot. So if people are having problems, if they're nervous about what their sourdough starter looks like, it's just a good way, for some great minds to come together and collectively troubleshoot.
Nice idea. Deanna Fox is our guest. Now we'll hit the phones. Emily in Plainfield. Emily, you're on.
Thank you. Hi, Deanna and Ray. I just wanted to chime in about the grilled peaches, because I have newly discovered them within the past couple of years. And where I live in Western Mass, there's this amazing orchard near Greenfield. I think it's in Shelburne, called Apex, and they grow the best peaches ever. And we get lots of them at the end of August or the middle of August. And if you get freestone ones, you just cut them in half and put them on the grill, like when you're done grilling and there's a nice even heat, and it doesn't take very long. And then I throw them in a bowl, and you can take the skins off real easy. They don't take long at all. And then slice them up, and I drizzle them with some maple syrup, a little bit of vanilla, a little bit of lemon, and some cinnamon. And if you have that with ice cream, you are in dessert heaven, vanilla ice cream or maple ice cream or something like that.
That sounds really good. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it is my new favorite summer dessert, and it's really easy. And once peaches are in season, we do it all the time.
Yeah, it's so good. So when I do the peaches, I also put vanilla ice cream on there. It's so good. But I really like to drizzle some balsamic vinegar on it, which sounds crazy. But my goodness, it's so that like sweet tart flavor.
When you do it with ice cream, you put vinegar on there?
Yeah, just a little bit. And you can even kind of thicken it up on the stove, or put just a little saucepan right on the grill and pour maybe like a quarter cup of balsamic vinegar in the pan and just let it kind of reduce to maybe half. So you get this really thick syrup, and all of the sugars that's in that vinegar really become very pronounced. And, it's like this, it hits you in every part of your mouth. Like the vinegar gets you in the back of the...
Yeah, I'm going to have to try that. Just to say that when strawberries are in season, I've made like a chutney that you use with chicken or meat or something grilled, which is strawberries and balsamic and a little pepper. And that's really easy, and it's unbelievably good. And I hated the idea of it when I heard it described, and then I made it, and it was awesome. So, yeah, we got to try the balsamic reduction on the grilled peaches. Now I have a new idea.
Well, thanks
so much.
Thanks, Emily. We appreciate the call. Deanna Fox is our guest from Albany Cooking School. And Rachel in Chester. How are things up in Chester?
They're great. It's supposed to rain, but it's nice out right now.
Good.
I'm calling because I remember when I was young, which was a long time ago, but anyway, I used to eat something, Mississippi mud pie.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I was just wondering what ingredients are in that.
So I think might be posted onto the WAMC website, because I do have a recipe for that that's frozen.
Okay.
I'll double check on that one. But basically, it's the thing that makes it like a Mississippi mud pie is that it's a lot of chocolate. So it's chocolate, and maybe it's even like some Irish cream liqueur that you can put in. But you can put in like whiskey or something if you want to. But basically, you're making some sort of crust. So you could do just like a traditional pie, which means that you put your fork in the bottom of it to make little holes. Before you bake it, you put a piece of parchment paper down or tin foil, and then put some like rice or dried beans or something like that in to hold it down. And then you bake it in the oven so it bakes through. But I really like to use like a graham cracker crust for this one. And even the pre-made, from the store is fine. And then you just soften up. I'll melt some chocolate with maybe a little bit of heavy cream and put it in the bottom of
Deanna, we're kind of losing you here a little bit. Maybe you should stand up on a chair or something.
Is this better?
Yeah, that's much better, actually. And
better.
I gotta tell you, Zach the engineer has just popped a vein in the side of his head, so we're gonna try to calm him down. All right, go ahead.
Okay, sorry. So you do the pie crust, however you're gonna do it, and then you melt some chocolate and you put that in the bottom. And then you freeze that just for a few minutes until it gets hard. And then you take some ice cream that's been softened. So typically chocolate, but like Rocky Road or Heavenly Hash, something like that would be really good. And you put that in, but you can add the liqueur in with the ice cream while it's softening. And just, you just take like a wooden spoon and mix it together. And pour that in and then freeze it so it gets nice and hard. And then you just basically make whipped cream to top it. And you can do some chocolate shavings on top if you want. And then freeze it. And so it's kind of like you have to freeze it a couple of times. And it might take you a couple of hours to get it to where it's nice and hard. But it's really easy to make. And it's
That sounds great.
Yeah, it's so delicious.
All right, Rachel, why don't you make two of them and drive one down here to the studio. No, don't do that. But enjoy.
Well, by the time I should bring it.
Well, thank you so much for calling, and have a great weekend. Our number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Deanna Fox is here from Albany Cooking School, albanycooks.com. Lisa in Boston Spa is up. Hello, Lisa.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good.
Hi.
Real quick question on the grilled fruit. Any idea how long do you grill the peaches for, or pineapple or something? And how do you know when it's done?
Well, it should feel soft all the way through. So even if you just touch the side that's not facing the grill, the side that's facing up, it should feel soft and it should be warm to the touch. You don't need to be piping hot, but part of the reason why you're grilling it is to warm it up. So it depends on the size and how high your grill is, but generally speaking, it should take about between like 5 and 10 minutes. So I just went through my archives of stories here, and I do have a grilled peach recipe. So I'm going to post that onto the Albany Cooking School Facebook page.
Okay.
So if anybody wants that later, they can grab it. But you just want to put down some olive oil on the grill grates before you put your fruit on. Otherwise, it'll stick.
Oh, yeah. Well, that makes sense. Could you grill strawberries?
Yeah, you just want to do it in like a basket, something that's going to hold them, unless they're really fat strawberries, because they're going to just, there's so much moisture in a strawberry, it's just going to fall apart on you before it caramelizes.
Well, some strawberries don't have that much moisture, though. This is why I say it's not like a blueberry, for instance.
Right. Well, I think, you could try it, but they're also really small. So it depends on the size of your grill grates. And, you just want to have some, maybe you could skewer them. A skewer might work if you put like a fruit kebab.
Related question, can you deep fry strawberries?
Could you? Yeah. It might have a lot of steam coming up and splatter you. So you definitely want to, like, do it at arm's length.
All right, fair enough. This email came in from Barbara. Best option for dairy-free ice cream / frozen yogurt. That's from Barbara.
The best option. I don't know, like, brands, which brands would be best.
Yeah.
But it's really easy to make dairy-free stuff at home. So we make a lot of, if anybody's ever been to, like, Disney World, they have Dole Whip. Like, that's, like, the dessert that everybody gets at Disney World.
Yeah, what is that?
It's just, it's frozen pineapple and frozen banana with maybe a little bit of salt, sugar, and vanilla. But you basically just take those and you put it in a food processor and blend it up. And it almost makes, like, a sorbet. And it's just fruit. You don't even add, you can add sugar or honey or something like that, but you usually don't need to. And then it's so creamy. It's so lush. It's so delicious. But there's, like, 1,000 recipes on the internet for basically, like, banana ice cream, where maybe you add in some cocoa powder or some peanut butter, and it's amazing. It's so delicious. And it's just, like, banana and one other thing. So if somebody's looking for a healthy option, those are really good.
All right. And by the way, if I wanted to make frozen yogurt at my home, would I just get yogurt and freeze it?
It'll be kind of gritty.
Yeah.
It doesn't really, the texture of most frozen yogurt that you get from, like, you know, one of those frozen yogurt places that you see in the mall, it's usually like a churned item, like what you would get, you know, like how you would churn ice cream, essentially. And then there's usually some other things added to it, maybe more sugar or flavorings or whatever. But I would recommend that you kind of amend it a little bit. Maybe you put it in a stand mixer and just beat some air into it before you put it in the freezer. That might work.
Makes sense.
Because otherwise it's just like a little ice cube of yogurt.
This email came in from, let's see who. It doesn't say. Not sure. Does Deanna have a recipe she likes for rum raisin ice cream? I just scored a little countertop ice cream maker. Would like to inaugurate it with a batch of that, especially since it seems like the only brand I can find at the grocery store anymore is from that imaginary Scandinavian brand using a very light pour on the rum, and I'm pretty sure I can do better. What do you think?
So the thing just with rum raisin again, or any kind of where you're adding in alcohol, you just got to cook down that rum a little bit. So whatever rum that you like will be fine. I like an aged rum. I like something that's got a little depth of character to it, something that's got a real vanilla kind of tone to it.
Yeah.
But if you just add the rum in, it's going to be icy. So make sure you just cook it down. Check a recipe. Do some Googling online. But I'm thinking that you're probably going to have to reduce it by half. So if you start with a half a cup or whatever of rum, you're going to have to cook it down until it's about a quarter of a cup and then add it in. And that'll prevent you from getting those ice crystals on your ice cream.
Now, when you cook it down, you're not boiling it, right? You're just kind of a medium heat and just let the rum evaporate, let the alcohol evaporate out?
Yeah, like a simmer, right?
Yeah. Okay.
So, and we'll take you a little bit of time, maybe 10 to 15 minutes, but you can do it. And then you can actually, if you want to, you can throw the raisins right into that. And then let the raisins kind of rehydrate in the rum while you're cooking it. So they're nice, juicy, plump little morsels every time you bite into the ice cream.
I like that. Now, what are you doing for Memorial Day? I know that social distancing being what it is, there won't be a lot of huge get-togethers.
No. So, I mean, we're home. We're staying home. We've got all sorts of projects we're working on, but I'm going to probably cook up some ribs. I'm a Finger Lakes girl, Central New York girl, so definitely Cornell-style barbecue chicken has to happen on Memorial Day.
What's a Cornell-style?
But the Cornell-style is, I think his name was Robert Baker. He was a professor at Cornell, and he was in, like, the poultry science department.
Yeah.
And this was, like, a marketing thing that he came up with to help people eat more chicken. Chicken consumption was way down after World War II. So it was a really easy marinade that he created that was delicious and just got people eating more chicken. He's also the guy that invented the chicken nugget. So
no way.
That kind of tells you.
I wonder if he
does. Yeah, that was him.
You think he gets his family gets a royalty every time my kids eat a chicken nugget?
Wouldn't that be nice? I'm sure Cornell does.
Oh,
I don't know about his family.
They must be rolling in it. That's amazing. Any desserts planned for your Memorial Day get-together at home?
Yeah, I love, any patriotic-themed holiday, Memorial Day, 4th of July. You have to make the classic flag cake. So I do it as an icebox cake. So you can do it with saltines are kind of cool. They add, salty texture. Yeah, I like it's like a salt box pie, if you've ever had one of those, where it's lemon and saltines.
No.
It's really good.
No, but I love this concept. Keep going.
Yeah, so you can do saltines or graham cracker works really good, but it's the same idea just an icebox cake. So you do the layers of cracker or cookie or whatever you're using. And then I do that cream cheese and whipped cream filling. But I puree some raspberries in one pot and blueberries in another. So you can divide your cream into thirds. So then you end up with red, white, and blue when you add in the respective fruit, or just leave it plain. And then you kind of layer it in. And then you can top it with your the plain cream, and then do strips of strawberry, strips of blueberry. So it looks like the flag. So when you cut into it, it looks like the flag. And when you look at it from the top down in a 13x9 dish, it looks like a flag. It's really easy. This is something you could let your kids do very easily.
Genius. Well, I'll let my kids clean up. All right. Now, in the remaining 15 seconds, albanycooks.com is the website. What classes do you have coming up?
Oh, we're launching a bunch more this week. But we have coming up, we have French macarons coming up. We've got a pavlova class. We have a class on air frying, a class regarding five ingredients or less. Pasta, empanada, pierogi, we have a lemon baking class, and much, much more. We have a cocktails class coming up, cooking with wine, Morocco, Spanish. Yeah,
Take a rest.
Through July.
Kick your feet up for a minute. Support comes from Pekarsky's, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, family-owned since 1948, offering sausages from kielbasa to Italian to bratwurst and smoked meats, home of New England farm-made sausage, open 7 days. Pekarskys.com. Troy Waterfront Farmers Market announcing open outdoor market on Saturdays at Russell Sage College with reservations. Also accepting online orders for Sunday pickups. TroyMarket.org. And Theta Dermatology, celebrating 25 years, serving the Capital Region and surrounding areas. A medical practice specializing in dermatology and dermatologic surgery. When it comes to skin, this practice is in Theta Dermatology.com. Thanks again to the great Deanna Fox for being with us today. And you can hear this show again at WAMC.org/VoxPop. Oh, in about 15 minutes or so. Thanks to Zach Malloy, who did not bust a vein. Charlie Knight answered the calls. Jackie Orchard was our producer. I'm Ray Graff. Have a good weekend.